And now we are back. The Mary Griffith Show is underway. Chris Collins is here. He's the superintendent with the National Park Service for the New Philadelphia Park, which is brand new down in Pike County. We're going to meet him today. We're going to find out about the park. And this has been decades in the planning. And let's not get too excited. It's going to take decades to get it fully developed. But Chris Collins is here today to talk about this issue, and we are thrilled. Welcome to the Mary Griffith Show.
Oh, thanks, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Pull that microphone right up to your voice, because I know you're suffering a little bit with a sore throat. We want to get you big and loud and strong, because God knows I'm a loud mouth. So, first of all, let's learn a little bit about you.
Okay.
What is a park superintendent? How do you become that?
I don't know that I ever imagined I would be a park superintendent. I started as an IT specialist for the National Park Service, and then an administrative officer, and witnessed leadership and decided that I should give it a try. I worked for some not-so-great leaders, so I learned what I didn't want to do, and I thought maybe I could make a difference.
Well, that is great, and we are so glad that you've been assigned to this teeny tiny brand new park in New Philadelphia. But we will look back on this as Adams County celebrates its 200th birthday this year. Someday, New Philadelphia will have a centennial, and we'll look back and they'll say, Chris Collins helped make it happen, and that is so great. Why New Philadelphia? Talk a little bit about why this is a national park.
Absolutely. Well, the significance of New Philadelphia is that it was the first town to be registered and platted by an African-American person before the Civil War in the 1830s.
And so that historical reason is why we're trying to preserve it, why we're trying to draw attention to it. And they've been doing that for a long time. And I know that congressmen have been working for decades to get this status. When was it actually named a national park?
It was December of 2022 in the omnibus bill.
Okay. So for 2 years, just a little over 2 years, it's been a national park. But if you went down there today, you wouldn't see a whole lot different than you did 3 years ago when
No.
it wasn't a national park. And that's where Chris Collins comes in, because we have to basically build this thing not from scratch. Some local people did a great job in doing what they did. But let's talk a little bit about the steps that you are putting in place, because right now you're not really the guided tour kind of park superintendent. You're let's get something to guided tour. You've got to really start and build this thing.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I was primarily hired to do, is all the planning that's necessary, laying that foundation for the park's operation in the future. And one of the exciting things that we have just recently started is the foundation document. It's actually a pre-planning document, and it is exactly that. It is the foundation. It lays out the park purpose, the park significance, and the fundamental resources and values of the park.
So that obviously was already determined, or it wouldn't have been named a national park. So you're kind of going back now and just putting into stone why the government decided to make it a national park. And as you said, the first free city platted by a freed African-American man. And so that hasn't changed. But the way we're going to interpret this is going to change over time. When you talk about planning, you've got to get roads built, you've got to have restroom facilities, eventually there'll be some kind of visitor center. We've all been to national parks. We know how expansive some place like Yellowstone can be. Well, this isn't going to happen in New Philadelphia. There is a finite area of which the town existed. But one of the first things you probably have to do is start thinking about, how are we going to get the whole town? You don't even own it's like Gettysburg. You don't own the whole battlefield yet. So, I mean, if you can, just walk us through. You know, I don't want to get so much minutia that people are bored, but just walk us through, like, this has got to happen, then this has got to happen. But in the meantime, we're also working on this. It's a lot of balls in the air that you're juggling.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels overwhelming at times. Well, we have a legislative boundary that was laid out when the park was established, and our primary partner, the New Philadelphia Association, they've already donated some of the town site to the National Park Service. They own some more, and the Archaeological Conservancy also owns a portion. And so we've been working with them to determine how much they could donate to us. Of course, due diligence for the federal government, it takes a long time to acquire property, but those are really the very first steps. You mentioned interpretation and that we're not going to be a Yellowstone. Well, we know that, and so primarily we're going to focus on our digital presence first. So I would encourage your listeners to really watch our website. I think that's where you're going to see most of the first development for the park. Hopefully that'll nab everyone's attention and they'll come out to the park and actually put their own eyes on it.
So a lot of people have never been there, but the best way to visit it right now is to go to this website, and that is?
Yeah, it's www.mps.gov/NEPH.
Okay, wow. Okay, so go basically to the park website and look for the new Philadelphia site, and you will be able to read all about it. So many people have heard about this. I've talked about it on the Mary Griffith Show, but very few people have actually been there. And so you mentioned the web presence, which is the best way to visit right now. What is down there? If I was listening to the Mary Griffith Show and I said, I want to see it, how would I get there and what would I see when I got there? And I don't think a lot of people are going to rush in their car today and run down there from what you're going to tell me, but give me an idea of where this thing is geographically, because we say it's in Pike County, not that far from Barrie, for example, but that doesn't tell me anything.
No, it doesn't. And I don't want to say that the web presence is the best way to experience the park. It's probably the best way to experience the park services presence at the park, because if you do show up to the site, which, I mean, I can give you the physical address, but it won't mean much until you plug it into Google Maps. If you show up to the site, you're going to see a kiosk. And the kiosk has a number of really well-done interpretive waysides that our partner, New Philadelphia, assembled. It tells you the story of the site. It'll also kind of show you where the town site was, where houses were. The foundations are still there, all underground. And the New Philadelphia Association created a really wonderful augmented reality experience. You can download that on your phone, on an app, while you're at the site, because there's Wi-Fi at that site, and then you can actually experience that augmented reality for yourself and take a stroll through the town.
So the New Philadelphia Association did a lot of the work for you, but their work is, while not done, they needed the big gun that is the federal government. We need it to be part of the federal park system so that it's protected, so it's insured for the future, so that no group can say, well, we worked on that for 20 years, but now everybody's old and tired, we're just going to give up. So this is a project that will go forward. That is the one thing about it. History will be preserved at New Philadelphia going forward, and that's your job to figure out how that's going to happen. So obviously, access to the site, keeping the archaeological digs. Are you planning that you will at some time recreate what the buildings looked like, or am I getting too far ahead of the game?
No, that's actually the fun part of the job. So one of the planning documents that we will do in the future, it's called a cultural landscape report, and it takes a look at what we know about the site, what it looked like, and through that process, we'll also do some various treatment options, as we call it. And so we'll sit down with our partners and by historic preservation experts, and we'll kind of take a look at the various ways in which we could interpret the site, show the site to our visitors, and so that will give us some direction in the future when we would seek funding to actually make changes and improvements.
Okay. You mentioned funding. I don't want to jump too far ahead. On Monday, the new administration announced that they're putting a pause on some federal funding for agencies. They're not going to take away school lunches or anything like that. We've already had that story this morning, that, you know, basic services to individuals and children are not being affected. But I'm sure they're taking a look at every dollar that is spent, including the National Park Service. So you're just getting started. We joked beforehand. I said, how does this affect your budget? He goes, I really don't have a budget, so how can it be affected? But he's not going to comment on anything political. But right now, I guess of all the parks that are being impacted, yours is impacted the least because you don't have a whole lot to impact, do you?
No, we don't. But I was hoping we would have something that could be impacted. So we're in the forever business. So, you know, eventually the park will receive funding. And so we're just, like I said, we're just getting started. We have special project funding that's helping us start the foundation document. Then that'll give us some direction for other planning that we'll need. So not giving up. I'm still going to go for more money for the park.
So this is obviously a work in progress, has been for decades, will continue to be for decades. And the great thing about the National Park Service, it doesn't matter who's president, it doesn't matter if the Blues or the Reds control Congress, people understand that our national park system needs to go forward. This could be a six-month glitch in the get-along, which comes at a time when it's unfortunate, but there's nobody saying we're going to close down the national park system or anything like that. It's also important to understand that a lot of national parks are because of scenic wonder, Yellowstone, arches, things like that. But there also is an interpretation of the humans who live there, the indigenous people. This is an interesting interpretation because of the specialized kind of people who voluntarily moved to Pike County, Illinois, to be part of this experiment of free black people owning their own property and starting their own community. Do you feel that perhaps this, you know, does this fall under diversity, inclusion, or is this history?
Oh, it's absolutely just history. You'd mentioned a lot of our parks are natural wonders, but the National Park Service preserves this country's most important natural and cultural resources. Such an important cultural site that is unique to any other that's in this country. So, no, it's just a part of the beautiful tapestry and history of this country.
So the fact that it had to do with a minority group, that is not going to reflect to the detriment because it is part of American history and a unique part that cannot be replicated other places. They can't say, well, Florida's already got one.
Absolutely. And that was really one of the beautiful things about New Philadelphia. Free Frank would sell lots to anyone, irregardless of race. So it became a multiracial community, which was unique at the time.
And so people who were abolitionists, people who were looking for more inclusion, they were willing to live next door. And in a time when segregation was slavery, the ultimate segregation, and then later afterwards, kind of the ipso facto segregation, if you don't belong here, New Philadelphia stood out. But it ceased to exist.
It did.
And so if it was started in what year, when did it kind of cease to exist?
By the 1930s, a new rail line was put in, which did not go through New Philadelphia. And so, you know, the population moved away from New Philadelphia to those ports where businesses could be more productive.
And when did New Philadelphia, when was it founded?
I don't know exactly. I'm not a historian, but it was sometime, I want to say mid-1830s to late 1830s.
Okay. So you're the planning guy, not the interpreter.
No.
You're right. It was before the Civil War and the strife, and these were freed people who bought their own land. And I think I know enough about New Philadelphia to say you're about right. It might have been the 1840s, but you're about right. And Free Frank McWhorter was an interesting person who still has downline relatives. One of them is a professor at the University of Illinois, and he's been on my show. So that human story is still being told. So you've got to figure out what you're going to do with the physical aspects of the park, whether you're going to rebuild some of the homes, the streetscape, eventually what will happen there. Sometimes when you go to places like Colonial Williamsburg or someplace like that, you have reenactors who kind of show what life was like. Looking down the road, is that on the horizon, or is that so far down the road that that's too far to even think about?
I would say it's too far down the road, but at my previous park, which was St. Genevieve National Historical Park, that was very much something that the locals wanted to see, and I'll just say that reenactors are very expensive. It costs a lot of money to pay a person to play one character, usually beyond a park's budget. So I would love to see volunteers in the future that could help out at the park, and that would be one way that something like that could happen.
Well, you mentioned the expense, but around here we have a very giving attitude. We have Civil War reenactments all the time. We have all kinds of things, and nobody gets paid for it. These people just like to do it. So you might be surprised. There might be people who want to come out And granted, it's a little bit different than the story in Nauvoo, because that church is very gung-ho for telling their story, and they're, it's part of their mission to tell their story. But you'd be surprised. Even in rural America, there will be people who want to tell that story to anyone who wants to listen. My guest today is Chris Collins. He is the superintendent of New Philadelphia, the newest national park in the national park system, so new that his job is to codify the mission statement and start moving forward on what they're going to have there. So, yes, it's the early, early part of the process. We'll take a break. We'll be back. It's 9:37 at Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Time to head up to the Urser Farmers Cooperative and tell you about that. Rex Battery brings you this report. Looking forward to that. If you don't have plans for Valentine's Day, that would be a fun event to go to. Chris Collins is my guest today. He is the new superintendent, the only superintendent so far, of New Philadelphia National Park in Pike County, Illinois. What will it become? The man sitting across from me now has a big stake in that. Everybody's got a boss to answer to. So, Chris Collins, what has your boss told you about what you're supposed to be getting done?
Oh, wow. So that's a fun question. Like, what does a superintendent really do, especially a superintendent at a new park? It's a lot about planning. It's also a lot about building and developing relationships with partners and stakeholders. We can't do this on our own. We need the community. And so, you know, I've been trying hard to make those connections, and hopefully in the future, there'll be a nice, robust set of stakeholders to help out.
One of the stakeholder groups that I know is waiting anxiously is tourism. Right now, there is no high-rise hotel at the visitor center at New Philadelphia because there's not even a visitor center at New Philadelphia. And it would be hoped that people that want to come and physically visit the park would, of course, stay in the hotels that are located in our area, which all feeds back into our local economy. You obviously want to get people to come and see it. So you talk about working with stakeholders and partners.
Yep.
How does tourism play into that? Obviously, you want to interpret the park from a historical aspect, but you have to sex it up a little bit so that somebody wants to come.
We do. And so I've been working with Sequency a lot. I'm hoping, you know, we can't advertise. The federal government can't pay for advertisement. So we're just really hoping that these businesses seize the opportunity, that they see us as a magnet, and that they use us to their advantage. There's a national park in this part of Illinois.
The thing that there's so much synergy that could happen between Father Augustus Tolton, the first black Catholic priest in America. We already know that Quincy has experienced tourism by train and bus from folks coming from Chicago to come down and visit the places where Gus Tolton lived and worked here in Quincy. There are people who are going to want to come to New Philadelphia that have a particular interest in that part of history, which is that pre-Civil War slavery history, and the people who were not enslaved, the free Frank the Quarters who were not enslaved. But how do you get the general population? I can see how some people might want to come the same reason that I went to the Lorraine Motel to learn more about the civil rights movement. But again, how are you going to get people interested? It is the only one, but it takes a lot to let that message be known. I mean, people in Miami, Florida are not going to know it's the only one, and you can't advertise, like you said. So how are they going to know it's the only one, and how are you going to draw people to it?
Well, I mean, I say we can't pay for advertisement.
But you can be on the Mary Griffith Show for free.
I can. And our Arrowhead, that does attract a certain set, a certain audience. And so I'll say that, you know, seeing that when you're on I-72, people will get off the interstate just because they've seen an Arrowhead. And then they show up, not knowing the story, and they get hooked. Because they understand, oh, the Arrowhead's here because this is of national significance, but I don't know about it. And then they tell their friends.
The National Park Service Arrowhead that says, hey, if you have a few extra minutes, don't bypass this. stop here. And we've got the Lincoln Heritage, and we've got so many other things. And that's the great thing about history. History's happening layer on layer on layer. New Philadelphia is just one of those layers. You're not having the park because it's a scenic wonder. You're not having the park because there was something geographically or physically different about it. It was a concept that was the only one at the time, the first, and became one of the only ones that was successful. And like you said, one of the interpretations or one of the things would be, what if the railroad had chosen that route?
Yes.
What would New Philadelphia look like today instead of people saying, she keeps talking about New Philadelphia. I've been to Barrie. I've been to Pittsfield. I've been to, you know, even Nebo. I've been everywhere, I thought, in Pike County, but where the heck is New Philadelphia? And the reason you don't know where it is, because it really doesn't exist anymore. It now is a national park to celebrate something that no longer exists and will not exist in the future. You're not trying to build it back and invite people to buy a house there. You're trying to capture what it was and why it was so different and significant for the time.
Absolutely. You know, it's such a fascinating story. And what we try hard to do at the National Park Service when we have visitors is we use what's called audience center experience. We want people to come and see the site, but then we also want to press them to think about the what if. What if the town still existed? How does it relate to the history that's happening today? That's kind of our approach. And so we want to make people think.
The problem with making people think is you have to get them outside their box. Speaking as someone who volunteers in the second grade, and we recently had a little segment on Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights reforms. Trying to explain to second graders who have never experienced this type of segregation, this type of racial discrimination, why that was. Because all they say is, well, that's not right. Well, that's not fair. Why was that? It is a very difficult question to answer. As an adult, why was that? Well, that wasn't nice. That wasn't good. That wasn't a thing we should have done. But why? Why did they do that? That's not an answer for them. Their little minds can't wrap their head around that. As we progress as a society and we get farther and farther away from pre-Civil War realities in America, is that one of the challenges to explain to people? This was real. This was something that happened, and having to build a town where black people could be free wouldn't have happened in Missouri, wouldn't have happened in Mississippi. Illinois was ripe for that because of the big abolitionist movement here, especially here in Western Illinois. But that's really hard to explain to people. That's a challenge.
It can be, or it can be an opportunity. I know that, you know, children don't understand all of these concepts, but they do ask a lot of questions. So what we can do is get them to ask questions, get them to go home and have conversations with their family. You know, bring their family back to the site. Make people aware. Make people discuss. Make people debate. I think that's one of the beautiful things that we do at the National Park Service.
Well, interestingly enough, when we were talking about this with should black people be segregated and why wasn't it fair, I also said, well, you know, at one time girls couldn't vote. And boys were the only ones that had a vote. All the boys in the class thought that was a great idea, and we should go back to that. So this progressive movement is not taking off quite as much in the second grade as I had hoped it would. But there again, they can relate to that because, see, in their little lives, the boys play at recess and the girls play at recess, and they play together sometimes. But they self-segregate. You know, the boys want to play football and the girls want to play jump rope, and they pretty much self-segregate there.
Yep.
So they get it.
Yeah.
But they go to school with black kids, and they don't understand, well, you can't play with me, and you can't go to school with me because of the color of your skin. They just don't have anything to base that on. And I always say it's like in the movie South Pacific, in the musical, you've got to be carefully taught before it's too late. Before you're 6 or 7 or 8 to hate all the people your relatives hate, you have to be carefully taught. So going back and experiencing this kind of history, although obviously New Philadelphia is a shining great light in the history, You're not talking about a slave's quarters or anything like that. The fact, though, that it existed also just goes to show that they weren't really welcome to live anywhere. They started their own town because of that.
Right. It was a challenging story, but there are also so many beautiful aspects. Free Frank, he really sold parts of the community so that he could buy his family out of slavery. He even put that in his will, that in the future, any future investments that were made, any money that was made from future, the sale of future lots would be used to continue to free his family.
So all these lots, the town pretty much went out of existence. Who owns it now? You mentioned some people that own it. There's an archaeological preserve. There's the New Philadelphia Association. The National Park Service has taken over a lot of this. There is a finite amount of ground there. You just want to kind of recreate the town, not recreate the town, but you want to preserve the town, and then you'll obviously want bathrooms and maybe a visitor center and some things in the future. But how is funding for this all going to happen? And I know that's the big question right now, but there has to be some in this planning. You've got to put numbers next to this. So what kind of numbers? Because I wouldn't have any idea.
Well, thankfully for property acquisition, we've been really grateful to have our partners donate all of the property. Like you said, there are three primary property owners within the legislative boundary that was established when the park was written into law. The Park Service owns less than half of that. New Philadelphia Association owns another chunk, and then the actual archaeological side of the town is owned by the Archaeological Conservancy at this moment. I'm not sure how much they spent to buy all of that property. We're just grateful that they did.
Because they are a good partner. Whether they ever let you have full access to it as far as ownership, they're not going to deny the Park Service's benefit by being close to it, at least. We always hear about, I want to build a casino, but there's one little old lady that's holding out. Right in the middle of the shooting match, is there somebody that owns a private lot?
No.
Okay.
On the north side of Highway 2, there is some private ownership in fields. That's not where we focused originally. I think New Philadelphia would eventually love to be able to buy some of that property because it's the Solomon McWhorter house site is there. If they could buy it, they would donate it to the National Park Service. So those are exciting things that could potentially happen in the future.
So you are looking for those kind of monetary partners that might extend your footstep because you do have to build. If you want people to come down there, you're going to have amenities.
Absolutely.
Let's talk timeline. I know that puts you under a lot of pressure because you're really... I can tell you're reluctant, Christopher Collins, to talk about that because you don't want to make a promise you can't keep. And right now, you really, it's a very murky ball. The horizon, you can only have 10 miles of visibility at any good time, and I'm asking you to give me the 200-mile visibility. But give us some kind of ballpark.
I can. Like you said, there's a lot of fog in the way right now. I can't see that timeline. But typically, what we see for new national parks is they remain in their infancy, so they remain in their early planning. Of course, there are some really early operational state that does happen for the first 10 years of a national park. I know. I look at you, you're like, wow, we're in the forever business. 10 years is nothing.
So 10 years, and then what happens in year 11?
Year 11, hopefully, we're fully operational at that point. We have interpreters on the ground. We have some sort of visitor contact, some bathrooms, you know, those amenities that really draw people to the site.
Because right now, you're not going to stay down there for hours and hours at a time because after you see part of it, then you have to leave for your own comfort and convenience. So
you do.
It's interesting, though, do you perceive, as we all know, at the end